I know what that music means. It means that it's time for me to say, hi, Rob.
Hi, Jersey. It's great to have music for this occasion.
Really? For when we do a live video streaming discussion called the Lean Into Artcast. In case this is your first time here, what is this thing that I just turned on my screen or put on my in my earphones? whether you're listening on your iPod or through Stitcher or whatever service you use to aggregate audio files. This is a show where a couple of visual storytellers get together and take a walk around a potentially difficult, dangerous, and otherwise unruly topic. And, you know, adventure and improvisation is fun, but it's always good to have a plan. And we have a plan for attacking these topics. And Rob, can you come up with a metaphor this week or this episode for what our system is for deconstructing the question?
You know what? I have a metaphor that's an apology for other metaphors I've used before, because I like to pull out the metaphor. And once in a while, not give proper respect to the fine people who work in the stunt industry, right? We look at stunts like there's something that happens and it just can't be planned because it's so different, it's so out of the ordinary. Even Jackie Chan plans things out, actually, right? I mean, there may be some improvisation, some in the moment, but he's got a structure that makes it more likely that he's going to be able to live to make another movie, because that's kind of important to him, right? So we want to live past this podcast. We've actually got a thing that helps us work through it. And so we'll take this puzzle, this dangerous topic that might, you know, sort of poison us under other circumstances, but we keep it caged by, well, first we get ready for it. We psych ourselves up before we open up its cage, and we do a little bit of a curveball topic.
Exactly.
Ooh. Yeah, we get ready. We get warmed up, have the curveball topic, and then we do the dance. We open up the cage, and then we figure things out. We size it up. We're sizing up the animal, the creature, the thing, and then you might think we're about to strike, or the creature's going to strike, but we get into the details. We actually sit down and have tea with the creature in the second half, and everyone comes out just feeling a little bit better about everything.
Yeah, that's as good as a metaphor as we're going to get. So let's kick over to curveball, our warm up exercise. And you know, I maybe this one should be called softball, because I put two in the rundown or the document for this episode, gave you some heads up on it, and I see that you've already planned a response to these ones. So I'll let you choose. Which one do you want to take on, Rob? Which one seems the more interesting one that's a mental warm up exercise for this episode?
I think the more interesting one is the that initial curveball. I'm just looking at my notes on it, but I can throw it at myself and both of us. But essentially, you pose the question in broad terms: can I describe the qualities of my overall outlook or situation when I'm feeling ready to blog or share online? And that's something that we've talked about occasionally on this
what
podcast.
Episode was it with Kate? Where it was you and Kate. That was like the main topic of discussion. I'll look it up,
sure,
while you talk about it.
It was Everyone Doubts. That's the title. I forget the number. And it's one of those things where I can describe when I'm not ready to share, which that's typically when I'm overly charged in some way. Like I'm either the needle swung one way or the other, where I'm like really spent, and I just don't think I'll be bringing my A game. Like I don't have something that will be, you know. And I'm not saying that this is always a great way to frame it up. I'm just sharing how I approach it. And that's, or if I'm like really feeling particularly intense about a topic, like I've tweeted one or two really intense things that are like, I had a thin experience and I really didn't like it, grump, right? And I never enjoy that. I just don't like the outcomes of those things. So I typically prefer, like, here's when it's ready. It's like when I have a thing that I could share. Like, well, let's say I found or I made a script, or I found a particularly useful resource, or I made something that I thought might make people laugh, or that's it. So it's either going to entertain or help people. And then I'm like, okay, cool. I feel ready to share it because this is going to benefit someone who reads it.
And that's all that curveball was about, is that it was a loaded question because I knew this is something that you wrangle with from time to time. Especially people should go back and listen to it. It's episode 76, Everyone Doubts. And it's great because Kate just keeps boxing you in a corner. You keep trying to slide your way out with abstract thinking. She's like, you're not getting away that easy. And she puts her arm in the way and you can't, you gotta keep defining what it is that you're thinking. But you listen to what you just said there. You broke it down from, this is the way I feel. These are the specific situations. And then you're winnowing it down to, what is my ultimate objective in typing words on a screen, right? Is this helpful? Is this useful? And when you say, like, I don't feel good whenever I share something that makes that out of a sense of anger or a sense of affrontation or feeling aggrieved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could just stop right there and just say, like, man, I don't want to do it when I'm angry. But take it to the next level and say, you know, well, why not? Why is that not useful? We can't just accept it as a bromide. Don't talk when you're angry, because there are times when that is useful.
Holy moly, there's some great examples of this, and this is a ongoing puzzle, part of my path as a creative being trying to figure out where. There's great examples of brash and passionate expressions that for me, what I pick up my guitar. That's what I put right out of it, and it just it comes out of my system. And you don't know what words I'm saying to you, but I have feelings coming out, right?
Yeah.
And it's safe. And it feels very expressive. So two other experiments that I've done with that is I will occasionally do a post on this blog that I rarely post to, called The Mystical Guitar Tribe. And I will just crank out something there. Often when I have the need to crank out something.
Where is Mystical Guitar Tribe?
It's actually hanging off the main navigation at agz.me.
Okay. Grabbing it for the show notes.
Cool. So anyway, that's something I am trying to work on. Because when we are in that state, there's likely something else. There likely is something that will entertain or educate or be of use to other people.
Cool.
It's just I don't often feel ready when I'm in that state. That's all.
Well, I just like that it's that, you know, you broke it down into a system of intent rather than a system of I'm waiting for inspiration, or I'm waiting to feel good, I'm waiting to feel happy. Because, you know, something happened to me today, which you know about, which made me exceedingly happy. I was super happy, but I knew, A, I couldn't talk about it because of NDA stuff. But B, there's times when it's a bad idea to talk about it when you're really, really happy, because then it's just going to be a series of all caps, you know, blasts.
Sure. And, happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy. Yep.
And that's useful to who? You know, it's nice that my friends know that I'm happy, but, you know.
Yeah. It's good to see.
But that's only because that my rubric is similar to yours, is that I'm always trying to think of, like, is this useful? Or, well,
oh,
that.
Gosh. Seriously, dude, like, you have some really consistent output there. Like, what is it? I suppose, is it that, you know, people will get some kind of reaction or excitement from seeing you, like your sketches or whatnot. That's one thing you're very consistent about, sharing a flow of those.
I'm trying to be. That's an intentional thing. There's two things going on with that. One is I'm trying to get myself tuned into concert pitch, into drawing on the tablet. So any time where I have the opportunity to draw on the tablet, I'm taking it, even if I don't feel like drawing. So like I posted a He-Man sketch the other day. That was me not feeling it. That was me saying, like, you know, I'm sitting in the car waiting for my wife to get out of work, and I got to draw something, you know, because I'm sitting here with the tablet, and I made a deal with myself that I was going to draw. So, but then the other thing about like blogging, which is the topic of this episode, is, and maybe I should save that for like the on the ground stuff, because I've got a stupid helpy tip when it comes to that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
On keeping a backlog of content for blogging purposes. Not that I do that much. I mean, I do like maybe like one post a day when it comes to like text posts, and then I try to do at least one sketch a day. But with that, I think we walked around it, and I think we did it on schedule. It's 10 minutes in. That's how much time we had for it. Rob, look at us. We're like pros.
Look at us being on time.
So with that, I think, it is time to talk topic. Go 10,000 feet up. Discussing the topic in abstract.
Mm-hmm. So, blogging, Jersey.
Yeah, blogging. Blogging's changed a lot, man, in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose like 5 years ago, it was definitely on the more common side to be doing your self-hosted WordPress somewhere. You'd find inexpensive hosting, which is great that that exists.
Yeah.
But you would be, you know, doing something to prepare yourself with like an open source content management system. Likely pretty simple installation. Which made WordPress super popular, right? Mm-hmm. It's like one of the easiest ones to install. But yeah, you were probably hanging out on a WordPress blog, maybe you know, with some tweaks to the theme and whatnot. Maybe with Comic Press.
Yeah.
Going, but yeah. It's that was a common thing, and other platforms existed, of course.
MoodleType,
quite a few. Yep,
Joomla, wasn't that one of them?
Sure, Drupal.
But yeah, we don't have to
anyway,
go back into
I don't know.
We don't have to go into like the Wayback Machine on that and start talking about our experiences with Lycos. But yeah, it has changed a lot, and that's why I think this is an interesting topic, because this was, and I should say, to preface this one at the top, this is going to be semi-related to episode 75 of the Lean Into Artcast, Lying Low or Walking Tall, where we entertained a question from a leaner about whether or not one should share their process while developing a comic or a creative project, whether or not someone should share sketches and preliminary materials while the thing is being completed, or should one just wait until everything's done and then do one big media blast? And I think we did a really good job of deconstructing the question and getting down to what the real nut of that question was. But in the end, we left it up to, as I think we should, we left it up to the leaners. Whether you want to do one or the other, we've examined all the options now. You make the choice, mm-hmm. right? We're not going to give you the recipe. But this one will be predicated on the notion of, okay, you decided that you're going to do some kind of outreach interactivity with an audience while you're doing something, right? An ongoing sort of, that's what blogging is. It's an ongoing publication of information of some sort, right?
Yeah, you're inherently sharing it with the world. Whether you are reaching the world immediately or not, that's a different matter. Yeah. But it's out in the world. Things get crawled at one way or the other. You know, whether you can go out there and ask to be crawled, or someone links to you and all of a sudden Google follows the link and there's your blog. Then you're just a search away at some point.
And I would think that what we're going to discuss today also is one more little disclaimer at the top. Is this covers, I think all the things we're going to talk about today cover blogging, vlogging, you know, video journaling, whatever you want to call it, audio microcasting, anything in which you are capturing ideas and publishing them to a website on any kind of regular basis with some kind of syndication in mind, some kind of sharing, some kind of RSS aggregation, something where more people can pass your thing around, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So you agree with me on this. Okay, great. So now let's see if I can do a screen share so I can grab this article that was the inspiration for the topic. Ah, here we go. Start the screen share. So, Mikan, do you follow this guy, Rob?
I don't. I will, but yeah.
Yeah, he's a tech journalist, and he's somebody who I've been following on Google+ for some time now. And he, from the beginning, was like a big champion of Google+, and I like Google+ a lot. That's not what this episode is going to be about, but the inspiration for this episode is he put out a challenge, and we'll link to this in the show notes, that he was calling out to bloggers everywhere to blog exclusively to Google+ for the month of August. And here we are at the time of this recording, August 1st, thought, timely.
Mm-hmm.
So, spawned some good discussion. Let me see if I can scroll down to the discussion. A lot of comments on this, and a lot of people evaluating the pros and cons of blogging exclusively to Google Plus. And my own position on this, which we will probably get through as we're going through the talk today. Let me turn off my screen share. But the interesting thing to me is this idea that it used to be that you had a blog and you had your social media to link back to the blog. But more and more with things like Tumblr and things like Facebook, yeah, I guess so if you got a fan page, right? I mean, like actually Kim Holm, one of the Lean Into Art instructors, was on the Comics Are Great show recently, and he was saying like his Facebook fan page is where he does most of his content creation now. Any one of these places can be the platform now without the actual owned, you know, personally owned blog. And before anybody gets up in arms about it, don't worry. Rob and I are going to go through this in as balanced a way as we can because I see both sides of this. And that's what the 10,000 feet up section I think is going to be about today, is evaluating what these different options are. So there's the preface. And
yeah. So what would
where should I blog, Rob?
where are you currently capturing your ideas?
Oh, because, that was evasive.
I know.
The best way to not get hit is to not be there, right?
Yes, I know that people who hang out with me hear that quote eventually. So for instance, I have a couple of different things where I'll capture some writing practice, and like one of them will be in like Markdown in one of my different Markdown tools or whatnot, but it's just a text file that I put in Dropbox. And another one is Day One. And part of the reason is that Day One prompts me and reminds me to just capture stuff, right? And
that's an OS X app, isn't it?
Yeah, Day One is, yeah, it's, I think it's pretty Apple centric.
I think you mentioned it last episode, I remember.
Yep.
Anyway, keep going, sorry.
And where are you capturing ideas already? So if you happen to be living at the water cooler that is Google Plus, and that seems really natural, but so for me, I have a little bit of resistance before I get out to like a Google Plus or whatnot, because I'm capturing my stuff somewhere else inherently, and so that's true no matter what my platform is. And whenever I think about where am I going to go, it's partially related to how I'm capturing stuff. One quick example with this. So you mentioned Google Plus, makes sense. You're thinking about images, or you're thinking about, YouTube videos or things that are sort of native to that platform, capturing words, sharing links. But then, I've been playing around with, but haven't committed to SoundCloud. And so here's an example of something that's a very specialized network compared to Google Plus. But it actually has like a certain strength that is outside of what this other the Google Plus platform takes care of. In fact, most blogging engines don't really make sound a first class citizen.
Yeah, you're right.
But there's so many apps that do make sound, that are so sound centric as their purpose, and SoundCloud is a pretty natural way as far as like thinking of sharing that resource. Even the Apple app, so like not Logic, but the other one, GarageBand, right?
Oh yeah,
GarageBand on iOS and whatnot. It's built in, like, Apple doesn't integrate with third parties like willy-nilly. And so that's just very, just really caught my eye there.
So GarageBand integrates with SoundCloud?
Yeah.
So it's like how iPhoto will share to Flickr with like a one button thing. You can export directly to SoundCloud out of iTunes or out of GarageBand.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, I've been thinking about SoundCloud for a long time too, for that very same reason. And I think that's what you've hit there was someplace I didn't expect to go, but I'm really glad that we're heading there, is that one of the things that I find really fascinating about evaluating these different platforms about blogging is it goes from like Google Plus is like, and Facebook for that matter, like they're trying to be like an all-in-one solution. You can post your photos, you can post your audio, your video, your links, whatever. We're everything to everybody. And then there's like really specialized ones like SoundCloud, like Instagram, like Flickr, right? Flickr is a social network, is it not?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a content platform where you can produce content.
Sure. Vimeo for video.
Vimeo. That's right. That's right. Gotta grab all these. But sometimes having that specialization can be like oddly compelling, right? Like your expectations are so managed by it being that limited. Right. Mm-hmm. I know when I pull up my Instagram feed, it's going to be photos or drawings made by friends of mine. Right. That's all I need to know. Whereas with a thing like Facebook or Google Plus, I don't know what I'm going to get. Some days I'm going to get like really compelling stuff. Other days I'm going to get those meme photos of Grumpy Cat saying the apocalypse is coming. And then, that Anthony Weiner guy's head is suddenly appears on the screen kind of thing, you know. Whatever is in the zeitgeist at the time, in which I go like, oh yeah, that's cute, and then keep going, right? Or worse, those ones where it's like a photo of hit share or you're a monster if you don't hit share on this photo. You know, yeah, Rob's rolling his eyes.
Yeah. Yep, but anyway, that's called a chain letter, and
yeah, the modern version.
We know what to do with those. What's that?
The modern version of the chain letter.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's an interesting kind of like part of the evaluation schema right there is like, you know, do you want to be on the place where it's all things to all people, or do you want to go to where the expectations are managed? And
yeah, exactly. So it's, yeah, there's that. And also what's close at hand, right? So that's the less dodgy version of my answer is like, well, what has the least amount of friction for sharing this thing I feel like sharing?
Mm. So I should use MySpace then. That was easy.
I tried signing up for the new MySpace, and it just, I must have the wrong settings because that site just, it barfs in my browser. I mean, it looks
I haven't even tried.
Bad news.
I haven't even tried, but I mean, like, that's part of the equation too, is like, there's always this kind of, for better or worse, there's like the sense of where are the people? Where are the people? Because, I mean, if you're trying to make something that you want people to see, you have to put it in a place where people can see it. Put it in a place where people can find it, which we talked about in An Extra Lean, which people can get to by subscribing to our newsletter at leanintoart.com. Anyway, I want to dig at what we're kind of dancing around here is this idea of when I was thinking about the question, I thought, well, as ever, I thought, what would Rob do? How would Rob answer this question? And I remember thinking like, Rob always comes at it from what is the desired outcome? What is the thing that was in the curveball today? What is it that you want to have happen? Mm-hmm. And can that be a rubric that's applied to figuring out where you want to blog, right? No?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly. So thinking about at the very least, I mean, your blog is a – so this is getting into some additional criteria, but – your blog is this platform of your expression, and are you doing that purely for serving your needs? And is that so? That's what fills the part of the outcome picture for you, or is it the complete outcome where you're here to find an audience that is pretty directly tied into your tastes? You're not trying to find a way to reach them or what have you. It's super organic, super expressive, very much focused on how you express stuff. Mm-hmm. And or are you is part of the success criteria thinking of that, you know, that the audience angle on it, so you have helpful articles and you want to make sure those reach an audience that would benefit. Mm-hmm. And part of your outcome for some of those articles would be, well, are they, is there like, how, what's the result of someone reading this? Do they just feel good, or do they actually have like a little bit of an improvement in their skills or discover a new capability or something, right? And well, if that's part of what you're trying to achieve with it, then that should inherently go into the mix.
This is kind of like, this is related to your drum of products versus services, isn't it? A little bit.
Oh yeah. I'm totally working. I'm, yeah.
Let's go there.
I'm just sprinkling little pieces of that in there.
Well, no, because I mean, okay, so you mentioned beforehand that I was being consistent with posting my sketches. Is that a product or a service?
Well, so what's, let's see. So what would, these are squishy things, but they're worth exploring just to see what we learn.
Yep.
So how could we define a product versus a service? Like how would they be? What is a product to you, Jersey?
A product is something that I consume. A product is something that just brings me pleasure, but doesn't necessarily, it brings comfort or happiness to my life, but not necessarily knowledge or wisdom.
Hmm.
There's no direct application of the thing.
Okay. Right? Sure.
So a service, there should be some application of it in my life.
Cool. So yeah, I suppose someone could come by to repair something. That's a service, right? Yep. They've applied a skill that the benefit of it it stays, right? Yep. After that, that's been, see, and that's where I think this stuff, it is squishy. They are squishy, yeah. Right? So like a lot of times I end up associating products as something portable and standalone. So in a way, each of your drawings is a product, but then you have the service of providing drawings, right? You provide visual art.
The product and a service.
They're not mutually exclusive. Ta-da! So you can be honing different concerns by focusing on one versus the other.
Sure.
So, yeah, the individual momentary experience through the product versus the ongoing expectations and experience of coming back and on an ongoing basis and building a relationship by offering a service.
So the service is less explicit, though. Whereas
if I
do a how-to article, like here's how you do a thing, and I've done that too, is like here's how I do this special thing on my Android tablet to draw. That's a more explicit service, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think either can be really explicit. And this is where it does get squishy. Yeah. But again, worthwhile, because to me, a product, you can have a lot of the same concerns. Like, how do I sustainably deliver a product? Well, you're really standing similar to service territory because you're thinking about this ongoing capability, whatnot. And anyway, so why would you care about this stuff when it comes to blogging? So are you going to do this on an ongoing basis? Do you plan to keep doing it? What kind of experience do you want as you share it? What, you know, like if it's really hard to get something prepared to share on SoundCloud, but like there's other really fantastic benefits, like maybe I'm still going to go through those hoops, right? But I have to face those trade-offs and whatnot as I'm working out my process to share the thing and then think about the life of the thing after I share it and what it's like to, you know, consume it and have people come back, or maybe that's less of a concern, because I mean sometimes I don't typically do this, but I mean a lot of people will. Let's see, I don't know this, so I really can't speak to it. But like I mean, you see like really meme-like drawings that don't necessarily seem like someone is probably doing that on an ongoing basis. You know, like. Someone takes a political figure. It's things that show up on Facebook or whatever, right? And they throw something on there. Maybe that doesn't really fit in the conversation. But I was going down the path of like, well, maybe those are less about an ongoing service or whatnot. But
well, I want to dig at this thing about ongoing service too, because part of this discussion that was going on in Mike Elgin's thread that I thought was so fascinating is, first, I'm going to break it down into two categories, and I want us to attack them in these order, or this order if we can.
Mm-hmm.
First is this idea that if you do your blogging on a site that you ultimately don't own, you don't own your data. And if Google or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, Tumblr.
Posterous.
Posterous, good example. We both used posterous, and then it went away.
Mm-hmm.
Where's your stuff
posterous,
going?
Posterous, yeah.
Where's your stuff going to go? And the second part of that is that some of the debate revolved around where do you want the conversation to happen? And Mike Elgin, maybe we should attack this one first, then we'll get at where you should ultimately store your data and like what about this ownership data thing. Because I want to read this quote from Mike Elgin, because he did another article, which we'll link to in the show notes. And it was like an editorial that he did about this whole challenge that he was issuing. And he said, there are all kinds of reasons to blog, to share your thoughts and opinions with anyone who might be interested, to get feedback on those ideas, to influence people, to cultivate a community, to start interesting conversations, to practice writing, and to teach, to learn and grow. And a lot of this is about sharing and about interaction, right? So it's like, I mean, there's like in here, there's like some more selfish kinds of like personally beneficial things, like to practice writing and to teach, learn and grow, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Self-development.
But like part of the discussion kind of revolved around this idea that this is what I think is really interesting is like, where do you want the discussion to happen? Do you want it to be on your blog? Because if you're monetizing your blog, right, you need those page views. You want those comments to be going. Or do you want that to happen someplace else? Or, and some of the people were saying like, oh, I push out my Google Plus to Tumblr, Facebook, you know, name your place. And they said, and I just go and check the comments on all those different places based on the initial post I made in Google Plus. And Mike Elgin's response was, why would you want to do that? Because then you're managing like so many different conversations. Whereas if you have everything point back to one canonical place, you've got one conversation to manage. And that was interesting to me. That was interesting to me that like asking the question, so we talk about, you know, figure out what kind of interactions you want. The next question is, how do you figure out where you want that conversation to happen?
And well, again, I think that's a great process question. And what matters to you as far as that outcome? I mean, so for some people, opening up different social networks is really no big deal, and they don't see any kind of side effect to that. Where it would be a lot like, let's see, maybe it's like performing as a speaker or a band and going to different towns, but then you hang out after every show,
yeah,
and you're in, interact yeah. with every crowd, versus saying, you know, or you, let's say that's one model, but then another model would be you travel around and you perform, but the only way to interact with you is in your fan club.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's an open fan club, but really there's only one spot. It's in that particular whatever, because hey, what we could throw open the door to older technologies like news groups, right? Similar thing, forums, message boards, all that. And it's just saying, like, in this case, it sounds like Mike Elgin is proposing that in essence, his fan club, his open forum is just in one spot. It doesn't have a lot of open forums, but obviously others don't really find it. I mean, for instance, us, right? Lean Into Art.
This is why this topic was interesting to me, because we have gone in our meetings between shows. We have crunched on this question so much. We've spent a lot of hours thinking about how do we do this, right?
Yeah.
And I know I've put the question to you before. It's like, do we have a canonical place where this is the only place to interact with us, or do we go everywhere? How do we address that?
Yeah. And well, the question gets even bigger when, let's say, your canonical place for some people would be fine having it be Google Plus. But larger organizations, for instance, aren't typically fine through various concerns, through ownership of intellectual property and all that kind of stuff, and controlling of brand experience, and you know, things that like big companies will especially care about. And they will host their own, like, that's it, you only will converse in this particular area, and they'll go a different route to arrive at that exclusive place to have the conversation.
And I can totally see that. I mean, like in certain instances, if you want to be COPPA compliant, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act.
Oh, totally. Or like, well, maybe you have a social network for lawyers or doctors or
HIPAA compliance.
Yeah, I mean, professions where, yeah, exactly. You have a lot of different secrecy concerns and whatnot, and the need to live up to certain security standards. Those are natural forces. Like because you choose to do a given kind of business, you need to abide by different policies and laws.
Right.
So if those aren't stopping you or, you know, guiding you, then like for us, we've wrestled with in some ways just discovering, well, what comes natural, right? And I've had a lot of ebb and flow with my consistency with posting on our Facebook page, because that's the one I manage. And so if you're following us on Facebook and you're like, why isn't there anything? That's me. That's my fault. Sorry.
Mea culpa.
Exactly.
It's not like I'm doing gangbusters on the other ones either. To be fair here, but we do our best with what time we have. And actually, I think most of the stuff we share is pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to figure it out from a workflow standpoint. What's efficient? What friction is one way that sounds like a I hope it doesn't sound like a business.
Rob. Just saying. I mean, it's friction.
Friction is. It's like when you're like, there's something in your gut that's saying, I don't want to do this, or there's a better way to do this, or there's got to be a better way to do this, and that just or just stopping you, or if like I don't feel like doing this. It's a lot like the writer's block kind of friction, yeah. Close neighbor to it. But but with Google Plus, for instance, I think Mike Elgin and you have, I mean, you've figured out a way to make some interesting capabilities come out of that platform. Because one way I look at it too, like not all these platforms are created equal for sharing your content online and having public dialogue, you know, Twitter and Facebook, you know, personal pages versus, you know, business pages, you know, versus, you know, your personal profile versus a page versus Google Plus, Tumblr. Some, I think, have, I think one of the big differentiators is like a long post or long form posting friendliness, right, versus short form posting, and also specific media if you happen to share certain kinds of things, high res images, low res images, videos, whatever, audio. They're, you know, all of a sudden, there's differentiators. Google Plus is super friendly to the long form post.
Oh yeah,
which has sucked me in a few times. but I've felt the pain of like it's slightly trapped at Google Plus, right?
That's where we get my follow-up question okay. for you, Rob, is, and you can talk about Google Plus here in a second, like, 'cause I think I know where you're headed, is not deconstructing the question. Now I just want, how do you personally feel about the topic of, should you have that data, that content, on your own site, or is it okay to let it live on somebody else's platform because that platform has reach and audience and broadcastability?
I love how you phrase that. So what I what I heard was, is it cool to rent or do I have to buy?
Yeah, actually.
And I, so for me, not getting generic, not picking apart the question.
Please, yeah. I just want to know your gut feeling on this.
I am really enjoying the owning of it again. And I'm trying to play with that and coexist with the disposable and more ephemeral nature of other places. One of the ideas behind the internet is the URL. And So you got links connect to URLs that have their addresses on the internet. And these things were meant to be in their initial creation, something that is, human readable and have it make sense. Right. So, and someone who enjoys like information architecture or categorization of things would be, you know, especially appreciative of that. But other people benefit from it as well. When the cookbooks and cookbook kinds of information aren't intermixed with, rock collecting or whatnot, it makes it convenient to find stuff. And it makes it obvious when I know I'm going to a certain section on a certain website that, I know what I'm getting. There's a lot of self-evidence in an address and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a lot of potential, like durability, like that address could potentially, depending on how you're hosted or set up, live on a long time. How do you view that? And so like I've been playing around and enjoying the that durability aspect, even though my experimental approach has hurt a lot of that durability. but anyway, I'm playing with that. So I like the permanent. And there's a lot of reasons why I like the permanent.
Or counter argument. Like, and this is just me being devil's advocate. Okay.
Yeah, cool.
That's what Google's for, man. I don't need to remember a URL. And nobody remembers URLs. I mean, we've said URLs on the show. We've said leanintoart.com. And then people will ask, where do I find your podcast? You know, I mean, like, dude, this is the Lean Into Art show, you know, leanintoart.com. We say it like 100 times on the show, and we'll still get asked, what's the URL again? Right? So what are people doing? They're going Jersey Drozd, Rob Stenzinger, and they're misspelling both our names, and Google's going, oh, I think you mean these two guys.
These East European names, what's going on?
These and stuff. No, but they're going to Google, so we don't need URLs anymore, right? We don't need them, Rob. What's your deal? Why so old fashioned?
I still use AltaVista. That's my concern. No, you're right. I use Google constantly, all day, every day.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic resource. So, yeah, you're right.
Oh. I thought you had a counter to my counter. Nope. But, But no, I mean, see, that's just interesting to me. I mean, it's like this comes back to something I was talking about on one of the other shows I do about movies and like why I don't mind spoilers, because I just like to know where my friends stand on this stuff. Not that it's going to have like too much of a profound impact on me, but it's just nice to know where people who you respect, where they stand on something, so you can better evaluate. Not like to say what would Rob do all the time, although that's not a terrible way to live, but to be able to help make a more informed decision. This is the way Rob feels, and I tend to agree with him a lot. So
for me, I've taken inspiration from how, honestly, the current form, agz.me, is partially inspired by David Say's website. Mm-hmm. David Say's web presence, he has essentially a collection of different blogs that represent different aspects of his process and interests and services and things that he provides. And there's a lot of variety. I mean, he could honestly have a web presence for each of those things. And I've experimented with both approaches. So right now I'm enjoying that experiment. And to actually give you more fuel for your argument, it's URLs are only one portion of what makes something findable. There's all the metadata and the contents and the guts of the thing that makes it findable, plus your social graph as well. And yeah, Google searches and also living on a social network is, that helps float things into your awareness.
And this is one of the things people were debating in that Mike Elgin Google Plus thread was people said, do a search for Mike Elgin and see what comes up first. And it's mm-hmm. his Google Plus feed, not Elgin.com, his website. And some people were saying like, ooh, scary, right? But because... I can see what it would be to some people. I totally get that. But on the other hand, yeah. It's like, well, if there's more activity happening in this other place, it's fresher content. So yeah, Google's going to give it higher ranking. But rank is something that's mutable. It's not, driven into stone tablets. And now that's the right.
Exactly. It's very mutable. So yeah, it's interesting. I see. So yeah, for me, my Google Plus does not appear in the first page of results. I have a lot of different results. Even like I have a SlideShare page that appears in the first set of results.
Wow.
Yeah, Jersey. Interesting. Yeah. Nope. Yours doesn't appear.
I think my Blogspot is like the first result every time, which is actually a pain point for me because I gave up on the Blogspot a long time ago. And now, and maybe we can talk about this when we get to the on the ground part, I've just started pumping content in there just to keep fresh material there, knowing that if anybody Googles me, that's actually where they're going to land. Now somebody's going to say, well, gosh, don't you want to go to Comics Are Great? That's your canonical site. That's the Everything About Jersey site. Sure. But as long as they get there by some route. Right. And if the Blogspot has like an ongoing feed of everything that I'm up to and everything that I'm doing that's worth looking at to discover more about me, so be it. As far as I'm concerned, I think this whole thing is a river now. It's not anything where there's like this magazine, this beautifully printed, lavishly produced essence of me. Right.
Exactly. So, yeah, the what is canonical in that situation?
And here's another thing that I think about a lot. I had a discussion with some people in the publishing industry, won't say who, but they were people who matter. They're doing things that are very interesting in the publishing industry. And I asked them the question of, you know, it came out of, I heard on another podcast, somebody who got a book deal and they leveraged their Twitter following to get a better advance. They said, hey, I've got X amount of people following me on Twitter. I've got a platform. I can promote the heck out of this book. I deserve a bigger advance. And they got a bigger advance out of it. Anybody, you know, it makes sense. So I asked some people that I knew in the publishing industry, like, does that work? You know, does a big following matter? And the answer I got was interesting. They said, follower counts do matter. I said, but you know what matters more? Reshares. Like, and they pointed to a couple different authors on Tumblr. Like, look at these people on Tumblr. Every time they post anything, it gets reshared like 900 times. And why is that important to us? Because those 900 times means that they just advertised 900 times. It's not their core following, we know we can sell to them. But we want to see somebody who's doing active outreach, that stuff's getting passed around to be seen by new audiences, right? So having
the
fan club,
they have, not just a passive following or just a bot filled net of people ignoring, you know, a high number of people ignoring what they post, but it's people who are now trying to advocate for the success of this author.
Yes. Yes.
And you can see the difference in all sorts of different fields.
And to me, I think, gosh, having my own WordPress blog is great, but, and I can put all those little social buttons all over the bottom and we'll all be reminded of that oatmeal article about how to, you know, be a Facebook pest or whatever it was. I'll have to write that down. Did you see that one?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
And it was oatmeal.com.
I love the oatmeal. It's what a great
Job. But it was one about like Facebook, and like it was in one of the panels, it was like, you wouldn't go up to your friend and say, hi, I'm trying to be a better person to make the world a more positive place. Will you please go tell 10 of your friends about how good I am at doing this thing? You know? And it's saying like, well, then why would you put like buttons all over your web page thing? And that's what the oatmeal does. That's its currency, is like taking a stab at something that's like that a lot of people take for granted as being a good idea and pointing out the absurdity of it, even if it's not always entirely absurd. But anyway, so you can put all the social buttons on your WordPress site. But man, talk about friction again. Friction.
Yeah.
If I post on a Tumblr or Tumblr, and I say, you know, here's a thing, you can interact with it by hitting like or reshare, and that's effortless, and it goes into this network of active image sharers, which is going to have, you know, like I look at the post on my WordPress site and I look at the post on my Tumblr, and it gets more engagement when there's less friction between the user and the thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's when the so your intent is well met with the intent of the audience of that given platform.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of strength to Tumblr and Google Plus take similar approaches. They have similar recipes. It's just that Google Plus has made certain choices that have added friction for me. But I think you have some answers to this, so I think we should.
Yeah, we should get to on the ground. Shadowingtronics is in the chat. Thank you, Shadowingtronics, for always showing up in our chat. You're a loyal leaner. He says, if I try you on Bing, I get an art company first, then the Blogspot, Google Plus, and Twitter. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Not comics are great. An art company? That's weird. I wonder what art company. I'll have to do a search for myself on Bing. Interesting. All right. So with that said, and with all that said, yeah, you're right. Thank you for keeping an eye on the clock, Rob. We should get to time to get on the ground with some stupid helpy tips, practical strategies, applications. Knowledge is useless without application.
Pure researchers just cried single tear.
Say that again, Rob. I couldn't hear you over the Zentradi blowing up Macross City.
This was actually related to the other curveball, but yeah, pure researchers just cried, shed a single tear at that comment.
Data is useless unless it's contextualized, right? Like collecting, like everybody who's like, not to get into a political thing, but you know, like a lot of the news stories have been talking about data collection on all of us people of all the world. And the question is raised, is that aggregate data, does it mean anything? Like what's interesting is what stories are they getting from the data, not the data collection itself, right? Because the data could be meaning, anyway.
Yeah,
neither here nor there.
Exactly. They're fun topic, you know, but yeah.
On the ground, Yeah, I was trying to find my notes on this. So what do we want to talk about first?
We've in a way we've been teasing for like a good portion of the episode that there's or at least implying that there is some really good solution to utilizing Google Plus. Let's hit that head on.
Okay. I don't want to turn this into like the pro Google Plus show because I mean like
it's in your heart, sing it, man.
Well, no, I'm just saying that like I think you raised a really interesting and valid point that if it doesn't feel right to you, like if there's some friction between you and the thing, then like Facebook is that for me. Like I go to Facebook and I still to this day I'm like, I guess. And like most of my posts to Facebook are out of my Instagram. So I'm not even looking at Facebook. It's like, I'm in Instagram and I'm having fun taking pictures of my thing. And then it just, well, I guess I'll send it over there because I guess people are there. You know, it's like such an afterthought for me. And then people say to me like weeks later, it's like, hey, how come you didn't respond to my thing on Facebook? I'm like, oh, I don't ever go there. So I get that. But, and actually I think the solution that I'm about to propose would work for just about anything that you can make an RSS feed out of. Because what I did is, again, Mike Elgin, this is the Mike Elgin episode. He did a post, which I'll link to in the show notes, about how to broadcast out of your Google Plus feed to everything. How to send it to Twitter, Facebook, I forget what else, like your blog and whatever. And part of the recipe that he proposes is turning your Google Plus feed into an RSS feed. And like there's this weird workaround. It's not there natively in Google Plus because Google wants to keep all this inside of their little – and that's part of the problem I know that you've brought up in the past, Rob, is it's very closed. But you can turn your feed, your public posts, into an RSS feed. And then with If This Then That, that magnificent, magnificent service, you could just pump it to wherever you want. So I have it go into my Blogspot. So now that's up to date. I have it going to my personal blog. I have it going to my Facebook public page and my Twitter feed. And I only have to post one thing. And you can set up a special code, HTML code in your If It recipes to link back to the initial post. So like when it posts to my WordPress, it says it has the content, picture, and then the text. And then it says there's a link and it says via Google Plus where you can comment on this. Comments are off on my blog because I don't want to have to manage that conversation. I'd rather do it in a place where I'm spending all my time anyway. So
also known as fighting spam.
Yeah.
So wait a minute though. Your posts look like they're first class citizens on the different social networks.
Yeah.
Because I stalk you on all of them, right? I've seen some tools that will claim that they will share, right? Or, you know, like, or for instance, like from Squarespace to Tumblr, or from Tumblr to elsewhere, or back in the day from Postgres to elsewhere. And there was always this second class citizen post.
Yeah.
It didn't look as good as the other posts, or had some goofy extra links and footers and some cruft.
Posterous was an especially big offender when it came to that.
Your posts look clean and your pictures are fully embedded, so I don't have to click anything. What is going on? How are you doing that? It looks
well, because like when you turn your Google Plus feed into a feed burner feed, and you route that through If This Then That, it grabs the media file. It doesn't grab enclosures, which is kind of that's like the one thing. If they could get enclosures, oh, it would be so great. But it grabs the image file from the source URL and then just displays it in the body of the post. Now, for my Facebook public page, I actually use a service called friendsplus.me, and it's actually friendsplusme is the name of the service. And I'll link to that in the show notes too. It's just friendsplus.me is the URL. Mm-hmm. And that actually does like some really nice formatting of the post to make it look like a native post on Facebook. And the moment I switched to doing it that way, I noticed that I got a lot more engagement on my public page posts. And the only reason I know that is because Facebook is so oppressive, or what am I trying to say? Insistent on letting me know what I just like went to the page today and like a notification popped up, said your last five posts have gotten 90% more engagement than the other posts. Do you care to promote them? You know, and it's like them trying to get me to buy.
Oh, they're working. That's part of their conversion funnel to get you to become a paying advertiser.
Yeah, which, you know, which, I'm just explaining how I know this. This isn't something where I'm like checking my stats all the time.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, they've built in analytics. I mean, there's some principles. Like one of the things is, so you're picking like all these different places to share. It sounds like, oh, there's some intricate ritual. And sorry to switch the topic, but we can switch back super quick. There's kind of a principle to thinking of like how you approach different things in your business, and you should measure, like, it's, I forget where I encountered this, but measure what you manage and manage what you measure. Mm-hmm. So you have a point, like if you're actually watching analytics on something, you're getting some feedback, right? Mm-hmm. about the thing, and it gives you, hopefully you can make some informed choices about it, and hopefully you're picking things to share your work that have some kind of benefit and aren't just a mystery where you're like, boop, I don't know. But not that there's anything, you know, you can take that approach, but you will likely benefit more if you're like, oh, I know why I'm getting more conversions or sales or whatever you're trying to do.
True.
Or more referral business or whatever it is, doing, you know, independent illustration or what have you. You can hopefully track it, right? So manage what you measure, measure what you manage.
Is this from To Sell Is Human?
No, it's not. It's older than that.
Okay.
Or I imagined it.
No, this was another moment where I caught myself, or rather you caught me, being apologetic for thinking like a business person. Anyway, I wanted to put a lampshade on that so that everybody notices what super you did cool. there.
No worries.
But yeah, I mean, If This Then That, if you use that with any service that has an RSS feed, if you got a DeviantArt account that has an RSS feed in your, you know, stream of or your gallery, I don't know for sure. Does Facebook have an RSS feed for your public stream?
Not in my experience. I'm pretty sure that's not the case anymore.
I didn't research that, but I mean, Tumblr does. You know, yes. Most of these services have some kind of an RSS feed, and then you can use an If This Then That rule to pump it to anything, to grab that RSS feed. I mean, you might want to route it through FeedBurner to see what the feed looks like, and also to grab your own feed, you know, URL, so you can always like use that and replace the source URL with whatever you want. But then you can just shoot it out to everything. Now, I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this. Does that like actually diminish your Google juice if you do that? Because you're scraping?
That used to be the case, but I do not know. I'm not up on that. It would be a simple matter to Google the topic of duplicate posts and Google juice, because there's a whole industry of people that study the heck out of those effects, where they will test.
Not to be overly cynical, but I'm curious what the difference would be between scraping from my Google Plus feed to my other sites or scraping from my other sites to my Google Plus feed. I bet you there's a difference in what the rankings will be, but that yeah. may be cynical. I'm not sure.
I think that's fairly well informed. I think you have a good reason. Yeah.
I mean, it's, they didn't put up the social network just to make us all happy, right? They want us to feed
yeah.
us.
I mean, it's not quite a Roach Motel because so, as in data goes in, but data doesn't come out.
Right.
Like the, yeah, anyway, but there's an interesting workaround. So yeah, your service of, what is this? The friends plus me, Google does have APIs, like ways to get to resources in their ecosystem, and much of the APIs they provide are pretty openish, right? Compared to like you could do cool stuff with just a web page and a Google Docs spreadsheet mm-hmm. and JavaScript. Like no worries. Like you could go fetch some data from that and present it in cool ways if you wanted to. But Google Plus, not so much.
Yeah.
But so like this friendsplus.me is like, well, they're working within Google's system to provide another approach
and
into their.
To be clear about friendsplus.me is it is a pay service. There's a free service which gives you 40 mm-hmm. reshares a month or every 30 days rather. Or is it a month? I'm not sure. But then like it's a freemium model where there's like paid tiers if you want to have unlimited and there's other benefits if you want to do different things with the shares. So that's why I mostly use if this then that.
And seriously, the if this then that, like that's what you're using because it's totally magical. It looks better than any other approach I've ever seen. And I looked into this a few months back and I didn't think if this then that had this capability.
Yeah, so, you can set parameters in what is the outputted thing. So like for those who are new to this thing, if this then that is ifttt.com, and you set up recipes in this in if this then that metaphor. If this condition exists, then make this thing happen. So in other words, I set up my initial recipe. If a new item is added to my Google Plus RSS feed, new item. That's the if.
Now the RSS feed. Pause. Where is that coming from? Is that coming from friendsplus.me?
No, that's just coming from Google Plus. And in Mike what Elgin's article, it's called How I Publish from Google. Let me click on the link.
So he outlines how you can get an RSS feed from your Google Plus.
Yeah, let me pull that up right now so I can explain.
Wow.
Yeah, you generate an RSS feed using Plus Feed Proxy for Google Plus.
Okay, so that's a separate.
Yep.
Gotcha. So similar to friendsplus.me, someone else has a solution to present your feed as RSS because that's not a native feature of Google Plus.
Exactly. And it's something that people have been clamoring for, but it doesn't look likely that they're going to be launching it anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So
totally cool. Makes sense. And they're playing with, and does that one cost anything?
Nope. There's no cost to that.
Mm.
So it's pluss.aiiane.com. Before Plus can proxy your Google Plus stream, you'll need to authenticate with Google. This process is done on Google servers and does not reveal your Google Auth information to Plus. It merely allows Plus to discover who you are on Google Plus and acquire an access token that will allow it to request your public posts from Google's APIs. They're collecting data on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not paying for the product, you're the product.
Yeah, that's, yeah. And then you can also find the source code used to run the server on GitHub. So,
because the thing is, like, I wonder, in order to get access to this data, likely they're hosted on Google's App Engine, which is not free. And so, yeah, they're paying for it somehow. But anyway, it's amazing that it exists and the capabilities there, because the free ones that I've come across before have been shut down because they did not figure out a business model. And they just got a big bill.
Well, so, yeah, I'm certain that it. Well, and here's the thing, it only has access to your public posts, and that was what made me say, okay, I'm cool with this because if I was posting it publicly anyway,
yep.
As long as it's not getting access to stuff that I share privately on there, and when I say privately, it could be that I share it with a circle of 2,000 people, but that is a private closed circle where it wouldn't show up in my public feed. So it doesn't make it into the RSS feed. That was like the dividing line that I said, okay, I'm comfortable with this. This is fine.
So that's awesome. Okay.
So I used this feed proxy to generate an RSS feed, which I then routed through FeedBurner to create my own special RSS feed. And then I go into if this, then that. I set up if new item appears in this particular RSS feed, then go to my WordPress site, which I gave if this, then that access to. Another thing that we've both discussed that we're not always entirely comfortable with, how much information are we giving if this, then that. Mm-hmm. But they have access to post to my WordPress site. Turn this thing into, take this content and turn it into a post on my WordPress site. And when you do it, tag it with this information as well. Give it these tags, put in this little snippet of HTML at the end that says, via my Google Plus feed where you can comment on this. And when you turn that into a link, make it a link that links back to the original source post on Google Plus. So when people click that, they go to the source post, they can comment on the thing there. You have a ton of control on this, if this, then that. It's really an amazing service. And I was recently discovering even more email recipes, but I can't cross that line. I can't say like, yeah, if this and that, have access to my email. But there were ones where it was like every time you get a receipt for something, like you buy plane tickets online or something, you get a receipt, it will automatically enter into tables onto a Google Doc. So like you could have like an expense document. That's
Yeah. They do crazy stuff. Yeah, they cool integrate with the up band as well.
Oh yeah, okay. So there you go.
So if I were tracking, you know, if I were tracking food, which I'm not, but yeah, I could have my steps and all that kind of stuff tracked and into a Google Docs spreadsheet. Crazy. Yeah. If this and that is amazing. So, but you're getting that their amazing post power by having that dedicated RSS feed so you know all this stuff to add to it. And okay, that's and then, okay, and then that, most, that sounds cool.
And most other services have an RSS feed. So like my Instagram feed, actually there's an Instagram channel that you can activate on if this then that where you give it like some kind of limited access to your account. Or like my DeviantArt feed. So like my DeviantArt feed has an RSS, so I plug that in for a recipe. Like every time a new image appears in my DeviantArt gallery, pump it over to my Blogspot so that my Blogspot becomes this dumping ground for like everything I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Every time I post an Instagram photo, put it in my Blogspot. And that's not having to generate any special RSS feeds. Those are just like channels that you can open up in if this then that. Or if you do have an RSS feed, that can be your initial channel. But I think you could do this with any service. You could make any one service your canonical service. Now, going back to your metaphor earlier that you made about, like, should I rent? Is it cool to rent or do I need to buy? The way my solution feels to me is that I'm renting and I'm enjoying the freedom of renting, but I'm putting everything also in a storage locker, right? Like, comicsaregreat.com isn't necessarily, like, the first thing that's going to show up in search results, but I'm hoarding my data and my content so that if these things did decide to go posterous on me, I've got all that backlog of stuff.
That's awesome. I'm using that saying.
Don't go
posterous on you. All right. I love it.
But yeah, so I've got all that content organized in a canonical place. And then because I use FeedBurner, I can just readjust what source feeds go into the actual RSS feed that's on the site. And it seems like that's the maximum flexibility. The only thing I can think of that would be a drawback is a decrease in Google juice. But as long as I'm posting effectively on Google Plus, it seems like I've got that one rerouted, right? Because that's where they want you to be behaving. And if you don't believe me, look at any Google product right now. Everything is getting Google Plus added to it. So,
yeah, very true.
But I had something else I wanted to throw in on this, like before it turns into like the big Google Plus parade party.
Cool. Thank you for breaking that down. I know this is actually getting like a little like, We definitely don't hesitate from getting nerdy on stuff and whatnot, but I don't know. I appreciate that breakdown because good, I know I was curious and puzzled by it. Probably others have been too, you know?
Well, and actually, I mean, as a guy who uses Google Plus a lot, I would love to see more of my friends there. I would be really happy to see more of my friends there. I mean, yeah. I like broadcasting on it. I like publishing to a large audience on it. But I also would like to use it the way like other social networks are used, where it's just like chumming around with friends.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Okay.
Aside from that, there's a similar solution in this Dean Tripp of deantripp.com, deantrippe.com. Not that anybody's going to remember that. It'll be in the show notes, folks, at leanintoart.com, which you won't remember. Google us. He pointed me at this thing called flavors.me, which is this really interesting, you know, about.me, right?
Yes.
About.me is sort of like this landing page for you. Mm-hmm. Where you post an interesting photo of yourself, and then it just like links to everything that you do. Flavors.me is similar, except that you can import five for free. They have a free, it's a freemium thing where there's a free account and there's the premium accounts. But the free account comes with five feeds that you can import. So you got like a sidebar of some sort, and you can put your information. So if you go to jdrows.com, I rerouted that URL to, well, actually, I should go to it right now. That, I mean, this is a visual show for crying out loud. So let me pull up jdrows.com and show you what the flavors.me site looks like.
Wow.
And if folks are listening on a podcast and not watching a video, you can go to jdrows.com right now. unless you're driving, don't do that. That'd be really, really bad. So screen share, and here we go. And so, is that working? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I see it.
Okay.
Looks awesome.
So, yeah, so here we go. We've got this cool sidebar that's all squished now because my browser is too small. Let's increase. No, that didn't help anything. Why is that happening that way?
That, oh. It is interesting that how the D is getting dropped off there. That would be a pretty.
I don't know why that is. I wonder if I need
just
to.
Just the CSS on that. I don't know if you get control of that. Change the white space to there no wrap. Yeah.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I heard a ding on the broadcast. That's weird. Anyway, so you can see the sidebar, and you can customize all this information. It's just HTML, and like this is an actual logo you can just drop in, this Boulder and Fleet logo I dropped in. And then you drop in this pretty background, and then I've got four feeds here. I didn't use all five because I broke it down into what are the things that people need to know about me. Here's like a landing page for me, and they need to know that I do drawings, that I update a blog, I take pictures, and I do podcasts. And the drawings feed is just my DeviantArt feed, and when you click on it, this neat little sidebar or pane opens up, and it shows my latest updates from DeviantArt, and it's all formatted, all pretty, and you can change the amount of items that get shown in here. You can have it be a grid of three, a grid of two, grid of one, and then when I go to my blog, this is just the RSS from my Google Plus feed. So here it shows, like right at the top one, it says, "Oh, Jersey Droz is hanging out with Rob Stenzinger," and then the next one is like a drawing that I posted this morning, and so on. And then I go to my photos. That's just my Instagram feed. And it displays them all pretty. And then my podcast feed is just the RSS from, I think it's like all my podcasts. I want to say, no, it's all the podcasts served up from Comics Are Great. So every podcast that gets served up from the Comics Are Great website goes in there. And then I link to Lean Into Art here. I teach how to make comics. But nice. But anyway, this is a free service that I didn't even have to use any if this then that rules on. All I had to do was just plug in the feeds, and then it displays them very nicely for me. And boom, I've got a really nice landing site.
Yeah, very well done. Looks like a really good service. Looks like a pretty easy way to do some kind of basic web presence that just pieces together things you're already naturally doing.
Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, that's another simple. There's a lot of solutions like this now, and the interesting thing that I think is, that this brings up is, I guess we have a lot of choices.
Yeah.
There's
can frame it up in a few different ways that you have a lot of control over your data if you choose to exercise that control.
Yeah.
And chances are you could find ways to, in essence, be like a traveling entertainer, right? Without having to, maintain an intense posting schedule where you're reaching out to, pretty efficiently to a lot of different audiences. Are there some negative trade-offs to that? Maybe we can research and comment on that in Jersey's Google Plus. There may be, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be a full carbon copy that gets broadcast everywhere. Could be a portion, right? Anyway, well, so you have a lot of control, and it's pretty cool. And even with something that's kind of closed-ish like Google Plus, you still have a way, you know, other workarounds to gain that control. Yep. Which I'm impressed. I think that's a pretty cool potential use for that. So I might give it a try.
They muted my mic. Okay, that was that ding I heard earlier.
Did it detect you typing?
Yeah, it detected me typing. That's amazing. Oh, Google Hangouts. All right, so we got to get through. We got to get to Quest because we're coming up on the end here. So, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready. All right.
All right, Rob, I will pull up the screen.
You okay,
tell
cool.
me about it.
So, while we heard a Metroid sound effect, you have not been Metroided. So you have all the powers that you've built up arriving at this quest. In fact, if you've faced other Lean Into Art quests 1 through 7, you have faced bosses. Now is the time where you get to use all that powering up from fighting all these boss levels into more of a goon level. and so that's the approach behind Lean Into Art quest number 8, full deck of cards. So the idea behind it is, you know what, not all quests have to be epic. I personally have I end up spending a lot of time on the quests. I learn a ton. I love doing the posts about it, but it's one of the things where after about, you know, doing 7, I wanted to try to take a learning from that and say, you know what, quest 8, this is going to be bite-sized somehow. And then the impish part of me said, hey, what if it's bite-sized, but if you want to take more bites, we'll serve it up for you. So it's so here's what we have. They're essentially mini challenges, and we have a deck of 11 cards that each one of them is a mini challenge. And so you'll come here, pick one of the cards, and print it out or download it into the editor of your choice. And this would work out if you work on a tablet like the Galaxy Note 10.1 or an iPad. You know, if you like working small, probably works on a phone as well. Or again, print it out. And then what you have here is a lot like an activity page level of challenge from like a magazine, right? So we were just looking at the greetings one, but now we'll look at this the
pirate figure.
Picture's a little bit small. Yeah, I'm gonna pull it up on my screen too so I can see the detail. So you're looking at pirate figure. Okay, so here's the challenge card. Step one, print it out or import it. Get ready to time yourself because there's points for this. And then start the timer, read the challenge, and do it. So here we have a page with a couple of shadowish shapes that might be that with a word balloon where they're talking. And here's the premise. Two characters find a cool action figure of a pirate. What does one character say to convince the other that they could be the caretaker of that action figure? You know what? You've been in this situation as a kid. Like, oh, we found this cool thing. Maybe I should bring it home. You know, it's a really neat stick or rock or an action figure in this case. And then you capture that in the word balloons. So what this is a really quick exercise. That's what it's intended to be. And you get 200 points for pulling it off in under 2 minutes, 100 for under 5 minutes, 25 for over 5 minutes. And you may notice that, again, this is one of 11 cards for this, you know, for quest number 8. Three of them are unlocked, and so you don't have to tweet your participation, but if you do, and you tag it with the hashtag, you know, LeahQuest8, if essentially all three of the first ones are done, that unlocks the next one. Once someone does 4, it unlocks 5 and so forth. And I'm curious if on the 28th of this month, then you'll have essentially 4 weeks. I'm curious. Let's see how far this happens. If Jersey or I do it, it doesn't count.
Oh, it's a bum out.
So they will be secret, locked away forever, unless we get, you know, we get people other than Jersey or I participating.
And these really are like 5 minute interact. I mean, they should take 5 minutes or less to do this time.
This time, exactly. That's what it's meant to be. So the, here we go. We got the limited space. We got limited scope and all that. Let your imagination go wild. But that's what this is about: practicing that rapid creative process, whatever is natural for you, and exploring it, improvisation and all that. That's what these are focused on. So Jersey just pulled up the duck, and I think one is the occupation one.
Yep.
So let's see. Yeah.
Choose an occupation for this duck. Sketch some props the duck should carry to show his or her occupation. What does the duck do? That's it.
That's it.
Doodle some things that the duck does, and we can talk about it on the next podcast. We will make some observations of what you did. This is playful. This is a simple quest, but the more you do, the more you unlock.
And exactly. And each one of them does have interesting things. So you're like, well, why would I care about doodling on this duck? You have characters in your visual storytelling, whatever kind of visual storytelling you're doing. How do you end up depicting their what their occupation is? And there you go. That's how this exercise benefits you elsewhere, because that's the idea behind all the quests, is that it's a workout. And this time, we're really, really trying to make it a quick workout. So give it a shot. Let us know how it goes.
What's the due date?
The due date there's no due date permanently for all the quests. However, if you want to be part of that initial wave of all the conversation and other people taking part in it, we'll be talking about this quest on the 29th. We'll be recording it of August, yeah. 2013. So we'll be recording again on the 15th, but that's not the follow up for the quest, but the 29th will be. And then so we're prepared, we would like everyone to have their stuff in on the 28th.
Yep.
Tweet about it by then.
So the 28th of August, 2013. Tweet about it by then in order to be a part of the discussion for the big quest wrap-up on the 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Google Plus. Go to comicsaregreat.tv to watch the YouTube stream. So, Rob, cool quest. I'm looking forward to doing this one. I did not know I wouldn't get to unlock things, though. Boo.
That's how I'm starting it. Yeah, boo. Exactly. Your participation doesn't matter. No, I love participating in them and all that. It just... it's a little more. I just kind of made that up right on the spot. I'm like, let's raise the stakes.
No, I think that's a good thing, because otherwise I would go in there with all my stupid braggadocio and be like, oh yeah, watch this, bam, bam, bam,
lock them all. Cool.
Nobody wants to play Street Fighter against the button masher. You know, that's no fun. You want to play against the person who actually wants you to enjoy the game. So yeah. Well, cool. Well, good discussion. Good show, I think. And if anybody watching or listening thought it was a good show, enjoyed it, thought that maybe we asked some interesting questions or maybe proposed some interesting answers, or at least made you chuckle at one point or another, it's a great way that you can pay it forward, as it were, is you go to the video on YouTube, give it a thumbs up, subscribe to the YouTube channel. That way you'd never miss an episode of the Lean Into Art cast. You could subscribe to the audio show at leanintoart.com. There's this podcast, and I can pull it up again for crying out loud. Let me turn on the screen share, show people this thing that I'm talking about. Look at this. Subscribe to our podcasts right there. Also, you can go to, and this is on the main page of leanintoart.com, there's a podcast link. Takes you to the podcast page where all the feeds are. You can subscribe to all of them. You can subscribe to just the Lean Into Art show or Geek Zoo, Thunder Punch Daily, which I haven't updated in forever, which we got to talk about in a future episode. But in any case, wow, Rob, did you pull it up?
I pulled it up because it didn't seem like the screen share was working on your side. So
it wasn't.
Here we go.
Goofy. Oh, sorry about that, folks. Everybody's watching me look at my screen. Anyway, so you can subscribe there, and then you can go to iTunes. You can give us a star review, however many you think we deserve. right? You don't even have to write a review. You just say, like, I think they got 3 stars today, and you can go, that'll help more people discover the show. And then, other than that, we are on Tumblr, leanintoart.tumblr.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/leanintoart. We're on Google Plus. Oh boy, that those URLs are not speakable. So I guess just do a search, Google Plus, Lean Into Art. Actually, it's linked in every episode of the Lean Into Art cast. So Lean Into Art on Twitter. And then we post lots of stuff, lots of neat things that we find on the internet that would be useful to you. And one of the things that we posted recently, we're going to be talking about next episode. I can actually give a heads up because we're actually, we got a production buffer in place at long last. We're going to be talking about working in the spirit of play next time, right?
Yeah.
Inspired by that wonderful Linda Berry talk, which I posted about on the Tumblr. You posted about it on the Facebook page. It's a great talk. Everybody needs to watch. Everybody who cares about visual arts needs to watch that talk.
Yeah. It's, yeah, great talk. Well worth your half hour, 20 minutes. Yeah. And, yeah, good prep for the episode because – yeah, we love the participation in the chat and whatnot as well. So, Jersey,